And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, no fear here on the glare. Your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAU Tifo Studios of Freedoms of the Nest, Phoenix, Phoenix to the Dock. Tim Pichot, come on in, say hello.
Good morning, everybody.
We're going to say a little bit about Trump this and economy that and so on. And Dr. Frank's going to, he has to play baby. You know, mom went home, so he's got like do baby stuff.
Well, I've got two babies at home under the age of three with no in-laws. So
yeah, but you have a wife that's not a doctor. You know, go and do doctor every day.
Yep, and got me there. Okay.
So this, she's a Savarta busy girl too. So having mom around was awesome, but now he's got to play baby. Well, yeah, he'll pop in every now and then, and call in, and we'll do some trumping every now and then. But you know, Tim Pichot had plenty to talk about. He wanted, got to say something about something. And then in the second hour, we have Dave Scotis, and he is with LitMoracracy.com, analysis of the professor. If robots get consciousness, they likely would enslave humans. Probably.
Yeah, I think that's a natural tendency.
In every movie. All right, so we're gonna talk to Dave Scotese about that. I didn't even know he was coming. That's awesome. John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute, Rutherford.org, is coming in the third hour to talk about an update on the American police state. Are we in a police state? I don't know. It depends what definition you use. But man, damn, it's looking pretty bad. So, Tim Pichot, what do you want to go on about today, man? There's a lot of news going on. We're not at war yet with somebody. I just can't muster up enough give a crap to read too deep into the stories because it's just all propaganda. You know, I don't even know what's going on. So I ask Tim Pichot, what's up?
Well, I think the greatest war is with not the necessarily the freedom of press, but the freedom of press. I mean, right now what's going on. I think it's one of the most important times probably in my entire life, because what we see happening is for the first time, the public is now starting to not trust the intelligence agencies, and they're starting to actually
start just barely just getting there.
Obviously this crowd and this audience, everything I'm saying is not really news to them, but the average, rank and file Republican, the average rank and file person that's out there trusts the intelligence agencies. They trust the CIA. They trust the FBI. We need all this stuff to protect terrorism, and now they're starting to find out that there was a secret stay behind network at the FBI that was put there to basically thwart Trump, and you've got an actual secret society, in their quotes, at the FBI, again to thwart the efforts of Trump, and you've got and when Trump was first coming on board, you had Schumer, who said we've got seven ways of Sunday to get back at the president. And
yeah, I remember was that after his election that Schumer said that, or was it?
I think it was while Obama was a lame duck. So I think it was in the transition.
Yeah, there was. It was after the election of
yes.
I think because I remember that Schumer's going, hey, there's a bunch of ways that we're going to. I'm going, wow, you must have really small inside. You know what I mean? Your manhood be not hanging low. I'm like, there is something to be able to you know, have to be compelled to say that. You know, I was going, damn. You know, I mean, whether it's true or not, you know, just to say it.
I think we know it's true, but yeah.
Yeah, probably. But I mean, you know, for Schumer to have to feel the head and say, yeah, we're going to get you anyway. And this is how petty these people are. So I'm, all right. So this is what was going on, you know, as the news. And of course, we have it up on Freedom's Phoenix, and I kind of scan it a little bit. I just can't muster up enough, give a crap to, you know, get all involved in it. But the bottom line is that there were texts between FBI agents that they want access to, and they're gone, okay? They had deleted, but there was some Congress or something that got them to have them. So anyway, they're out there.
And there was other texts where they were saying we need to delete the text. And I heard somebody say, well, maybe Trump should give his statement to Mueller in text, and that way the FBI will end up losing him.
So the concept is that there's these texts between FBI agents that have them colluding with how they're going to attack and get Trump, and it documents it all. And then they went on about some little secret handshake society they have.
Yeah, where they would meet off-site, and there was, you know, and again, it's not every single person in the FBI, not every person's bad in the FBI, and that's how we know about some of this stuff, but you got the people at the top, you know, the they, them, those, you know, maybe the top 30 who, you know, all their stuff was messed up. They were there waiting to get the Teneo IPO. They were there waiting to get, you know, the keys to the kingdom. They were there to, you know, basically put the final noose around this Republic's neck to, you know, for once and for all, you know, basically squash all their opposition, and basically Trump, you know, set their agenda back, you know, potentially decades. And again, there's a lot of things that I don't like that Trump is doing, and I'm not here just to, you know, completely, you know, grovel to everything that's going on. But when you take a look at the other side and you take a look at the censorship, the other side at the left is trying to claim that Trump is like Stalin. Actually, that's Jeff Flake over here in Arizona, who's on the right, supposedly, saying that Trump reminds him of Stalin. But then you look at the censorship that's going on. Just the other day, Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein wrote a letter to Mark Zuckerberg and the CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, calling for them to stop the hashtag, I believe it was released a memo, from going viral. So, I mean, you want to talk about a Stalinist, you know, move. Go on Twitter right now and go to the Drudge Report. Every single one of Drudge's tweets says, you know, this is hidden because it's could be insensitive material. I mean, so you want to talk about censorship? The censorship is coming the other direction. You want to talk about censorship? Look at my Facebook page, where in 2 months it looked like I was, you know, the price of Bitcoin going up to the moon, and all of a sudden I got completely shadow banned, where they won't even share my stuff anymore. They won't share my stuff to new people anymore. And it's all like, I can prove it. I can show you what it looks like. You know, it's not a coincidence this stuff is happening. So the censorship is happening to, you know, anybody, you know, to the right of basically Stalin over here. And it's just, and luckily now the average American public is starting to realize this. They're starting to realize that the media is fake news. They're starting to realize, wait, the intelligence agencies, you know, are there to basically blackmail the politicians and to control, you know, perpetuate the deep state. It's not there for you and me. And I got into it with a lot of Republicans, you know, not even too long ago, about a lot of these issues, but now those same people are starting to come around and say, wait, you know, the FBI would do this and the CIA would do this? You know, I can't believe it. And obviously you and I are shaking our heads of like, yeah, duh, like, of course, you know, this is the stuff that's going on. But I see, a watershed moment where the intelligence agencies and the media jumped the shark, so to speak, because now it's just so blatant and in your face that, I mean, you'd have to be just completely programmed by the media to basically, you know, ignore what's going on at this point. And, you know, I think one big mistake the Democrats made is Trump, I think, was trying to be conciliatory when he came in, wasn't trying to go after Hillary Clinton, trying to be somewhat of a nice guy. And then the Democrats, they don't care. They immediately then try to get him on everything, whereas everything they're trying to get him on, if you take a look at what the Democrats are doing, it's like 1,000 times even worse. I mean, you want to talk about Russian collusion? Let's talk about the Democrats' Russian collusion. I mean, you want to talk about, you know, Stalinist takeover? Let's talk about the Democrats' Stalinist takeover. I mean, it's like Trump, I think, is saying, like, oh, you want to play? Let's go tit for tat, because he can keep going.
Tim has something to say, so we're going to let him keep saying it until he runs out of air. I got a bunch of questions.
I'll take a breath.
Some other stuff going on in the economy, but we'll be back. Tim Pachone, and, you know, like a little Trump report. Just a little bit. from the third letter of Captain Mark. The Crown's observation conditions us to be dishonest with ourselves. Therefore, constant surveillance produces a society of constant deception. Honest communication is the seed of civilized conduct. To deny us this seed is to deny us its fruits. But the Crown's primary objective is to stifle free thought itself, to make its subjects incapable of dissent. Seasoned pirates have always encrypted messages and codes and ciphers, so intercepted transmissions were incomprehensible. But today, the Crown possesses advanced tools of pattern recognition that document, profile, and predict our every move. Today, piracy requires hailing frequencies completely invisible to the Crown. We are tired of poltergeists in the static. Looking for a community of like-minded scoundrels, or just want some swag to let the Crown know what you think of it? Join the conversation at piratswithoutborders.com.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Miss Shedlock is an economist that we came across back in, God, it had to be like 05 or something. And I remember I was producing for Charles Goyette, and he said, you know, I give me something on the, there was some news about the big three. The automotive industry was having problems. And he's going, yeah, give me somebody you can talk about. So I did some research going around. The guy was really, wrote some really good articles about it and skipped to the end. I mean, a lot of times, all right. When you're doing internet research, you'll have a lot of the mainstream, the lamestream media, you know, the CNBCs and the USA Todays and the Washington Post and all
fake
this kind
news.
Of stuff. Fake news, exactly. You know, of all the fake news guys, they're going, oh, no, 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 you didn't get the memo. This is what we're supposed to say about that. And I've seen this in, you know, in politics and, you know, even the blog and Move On and the left and the anti-war said they were. You know, they would, you know, this is the narrative that we all are approved to talk about. And I'm going, well, that internet ain't any good over there either. You know, these sources. Every now and then you have someone that rises to the top because they're paid, you know, by the people. You know, they pay for their newsletter. You know, it's like Casey Research with Doug Casey. You have Miss Shedlock, and it was, God, what they call it, the Whiskey Report or Whiskey something. I can't remember. He was publishing with this group. And now he's with another group. They have a group of newsletter. Matter of fact, Charles Goyette was hired by one of these newsletter groups, and he would write for them. And so when I would do the research and you find somebody, you go, yeah, this guy, this is, you know, and I guess you're kind of, you have your own bias or something, but I just want to get through the BS. Well, Miss Shedlock popped up as, man, let me tell you what's really going on with the American automotive industry. And I read this and I'm going, damn. So I go to Charles, I said, you need to get this guy on. And he goes, well, what's his bona fides? Well, he's a smart guy and he's got, you know, this blog that does, yeah, what? A blog? The hell's that? You know, is it? So it was a bias against, anyway, oh, it's just somebody on their internet, you know? And I'm going, no. This is where I find most of my information. And it was right about that time that we started creating Freedom's Phoenix. And it was from, you know, instances like this. I'm going, they're not giving credence to people that really know what's going on. There was a woman, her name, she went by Twist. She had her 17-year-old son set up a webpage for her. And then she wrote with a real estate attorney and her, and it was called housingdoom.com. And she was predicting, you know, what was coming. She's like, damn. She may not have got into the weeds and the financials of it, but she knew they were BSing because she would travel around these developments and you would see where they put the styrofoam, you know, chicken wire, they're getting ready to stucco it. Well, they'd leave it at that stage and start to weather and turn yellow and you get weeds in the yards. And then you'd have all these people that did buy out of hundreds of homes, you'd have 30, and then they had all the HOA, you know, to cover. So they're paying, you know, $2,000 a month to clean their park or something, you know. And she's like, yeah, there's something weird going on. This was happening in Denver, here, Las Vegas. Well, the Wall Street Journal came out, and they wanted to go on tour and so on. And they, yeah, well, you know, they're saying, and some, and there's a little bit of anecdotal evidence of, and kind of, And it doesn't, but they would get one story and then it'd be gone. You know, they wouldn't cover it. So one of these authors of what was really going on, what was coming, that, you know, gave me kind of foresight into what was going to happen was Miss Shedlock. So I always check him, and he's got a story out right now. Existing home sales dropped 3.6% as supply hits 19-year low. That is not good, okay? What that means is you have fewer homes for sale out. Usually when you have a low inventory, the price goes up. You have a 19-year low in supply, and housing prices are still dropping by almost 4%. I'm going, yep, here we go. These were the headlines when I looked back. If you go back right in the break, I'll go back. You know, it'd be 2007, 8. You go in there during the Revolution years. You know, the politicking was, you know, distracting a lot of people. You go back there and you look, and it's the headlines were the same. Stock market's as high as it's ever going to be. Oh, real estate's ever, you know, always going up. Oh, everything's great.
Consumer confidence, all-time high.
All-time. Irrational exuberance. I mean, you know, it was just, and you're going, well, now what are people saying it? Ernie, did you read the news? The stock market's, I had dinner with an old partner of mine, and he goes, yeah, but the stock market is at the all-time high, Ernie. And so I'm going, when the hell is it not at the all-time high before it crashes? When is it not that? I mean, what, you know, how old are you, man? You know, I mean, you see this stuff all the time. The Econo Day consensus estimate for December existing home sales was 5.75 million units at a seasonally adjusted annualized rate. Instead, home sales fell 3.6% to 5.5 million units in a range of 5.5 million units to 5 million. I mean, you can get all the data here. Bottom line is this. Existing sales value costs are going down, and supply is at a low for almost 20 years. I don't know. What are your comments, Tam? What do you think is going to happen?
I mean, another thing I like to add is that's on the backdrop where the rates, relatively speaking, are still super low. And what we've been seeing is, if you look at and I'll give a little air quotes here, what supposedly is like the safest investment would be, let's say, like the 7 to 10 year treasury. The people that invested into that over the last year are actually down money right now. So if you wanted to be super safe, you would actually be down right now. And one thing that nobody...
Yeah, but down only a little bit.
Down, you can go broke safely. That's a phrase I've been using for a while. But last year when I gave a talk at the Breakfast Club right before Morpheus, right before they ended up getting him, I had a presentation called The Trump Effect and Why Good News is Bad News. And so right now, and I see all this playing out exactly as I was talking about, because you have all this supposed good news. Again, I'll do this in air quotes. So you've got, you know, the stock market all-time highs, you know, all this great news, you know, it's a new day for America. I mean, even Alex Jones has turned the corner and said, you know, talking about how great everything is and Trump solved everything. So, I mean, you want to talk about a contrarian indicator when Alex Jones is, you know, sounding like, you know, CNBC, you know, at that point, I think, you know, we've reached, you know, the peak hysteria. But as all this good news, and again, I'll do this in air quotes, is going on, it means that now the Federal Reserve doesn't have cover to not raise rates. And so the good news is going to lead to the rates going up, which is going to be bad news because this is an economy that's predicated on $20 trillion of debt that doesn't include Social Security. It doesn't include Medicare, which is more of an obligation than Social Security. It doesn't include all these wars. It doesn't include so many different things that it's not even funny. And so our government, our economy cannot handle higher interest rates at all. And people want to focus on Bitcoin. I mean, Bitcoin could go down to zero. And guess what? It wouldn't really matter in the grand scheme of things because the amount of whales that have Bitcoin that would have any like a trickle down effect to the rest of the economy is probably slim to none. Whereas guess what? If the rates only go up like 1 or 2%, that could be game over. Our economy cannot handle another 1 or 2% rise in interest rates because what would happen is as rates go up 1%, the underlying value of the bonds go down. So if rates go up 1%, the Fed would lose about $440 billion. And where are the regulators talking about that? Where is that being discussed on CNBC?
Yeah, where is it being discussed that the Fed owns the debt? Where'd that happen?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
1913 and on.
No. They've been buying debt. Yeah, we'll talk about it when we come back.
Now, how much money will all those closeted Republican convention goers bring into the city, Marie?
A lot. The average area prostitute normally makes around $200 to $300 a week jerking off truck drivers behind the bus station.
I see.
Next week, they are expecting to make 30 times that amount sucking off secretly gay Republicans.
Wow.
You figure the fact that these delegates are so repressed and filled with self-hatred,
yes,
they tend to like the filthiest, kinkiest sex acts imaginable.
Oh, that's right.
Which tends to cost more. The average well-adjusted gay man has no desire to smear fecal matter all over his partner's face to
no.
be beat up by him, but that is exactly the sort of thing that these repressed conservatives are willing to pay top dollar for.
Okay, as well as the services of transsexuals, I understand.
Yes. A lot of the Republicans repeatedly call the prostitutes faggots or
True.
Start crying after they've had sex with them.
I suppose the prostitutes are shoring up on their politics so they can talk to the Republicans.
Ha ha, Andrea, what do you think this is, Pretty Woman? They're just there to get
right. Thank you, Marie Byron.
Oh, RNC's always a good time.
This is the Onion News Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Memos! Memos to financial guys. They say, hey, you financial guys, you're not allowed to mine Bitcoin. You're not allowed because you're not allowed. Yeah, but I know it's going to go to credit. Yeah, that's why you're not allowed. You know?
You got to stay safe and go into the 7 to 10 year that lost money last year. You know, how dare you talk about Bitcoin?
That is amazing that they would do that. Where does this happen? I mean, this is like totalitarian kind of stuff. So I'm not feeling warm and fuzzy.
Are
you going
to ban calculators next? I mean, if you're mining Bitcoin, and I don't even mine Bitcoin for full disclosure, but however,
Now, don't you?
Yeah, it's like, I want to.
I need to talk to Tim Fry over at Roberts and see, we got a little bit more silver here, throw a little over there. I mean, it was like, oh, just buy more crypto or get more miners. I don't know, man. Another $1,000 in silver, just to, $100 more in silver, to $500 more in silver, just make me feel better, because you just know. And that's it. Because even the cryptos are not, you're right. I mean, you can't, hold it. The crypto to me was still just my silver moving machine, I can liquidate it here, do a brain wallet, remember whatever phrase, go to, south of whatever border, and boom, I can get it right back and go get more silver.
Well, Davos are telling you can't do that anymore, that we're going to regulate it out of existence.
Regulate what out?
Bitcoin, supposedly. And then today, Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, basically said that they're going to start coming down hard on all the wallet providers, making sure that they have all KYC, AML. That's today on CNBC. There's actually a Facebook page called, I don't know if some of you have seen it out there, called CNBC Crypto, where it is, you're talking about like the Judas Goat crypto page. I mean, this is, every day there's basically, it's nothing but, I'd say, the fear, uncertainty, doubt of basically why you shouldn't be in crypto, but it's called the CNBC Crypto page. It's just, I just monitored to see kind of the pulse of, all the propaganda that's going on. If you want to get back to some of the economy stuff, what I really see going on here is a big thing that everybody's, completely missing as they're whistling past the graveyard is, Bitcoin could go to zero in the grand scheme of things. It doesn't really matter. The whole cryptocurrency space could go to zero. Not really going to affect anything because it's still just a drop in the bucket compared to everything else. The big enchilada is not even the stock market. The big enchilada, well, I would actually say the big enchilada is probably the dollar, Along with that is the bonds. And so because the bond market is far bigger than the stock market, and what you're seeing is the bond market just now really is starting to break, because as rates go up, the underlying values of the bonds go down.
Okay. Now stop right there, and we're going to need to have that explained. This is who we're talking to, Tim Pachot, libertarian advisor. He's a wealth advisor with a CFP, whatever that means, entrepreneur, Ironman triathlete, recognized hero and libertarian who wants to make America a better place for his daughters. Okay, so here's the financial planner guy. This is what he does. But every time he comes out and he talks and he says stuff like this, he goes, "Let me tell you what's going on." There's just some compliance officer going, "Hey, you're a financial advisor. You're not supposed to advise financially, publicly or something." I mean, I don't understand this. It's like they gotta. All you guys are supposed to understand what's going on. and then you're not supposed to express it to anybody. You can't write it down. You got that web page. You did this, you know, marketing thing. You shared on your blog. You're just, you know, bad boy. You slapped a ruler across the back of the hand, and you're not. I'm going, what the hell good are you? So I need to, you know, have you explain that one thing. And I had explained to me, and I probably get it, but, you know, for the audience, because, I know. You just don't know. Yeah, that's it. But, when the interest rates go up on a bond, the underlying principal, the asset that you bought that bond with, the value goes down. Okay? Why?
So this concept is referred to as interest rate risk or duration risk. But let's say, you know, interest rates are, let's say, 3%, and you can get a 3% bond, and then now rates go up to 5%. Are you going to pay as much for that 3% bond if you can go out right now and buy one for 5? Of course not, because, you know, there's a certain trade-off. Now, if you were to hold on, let's say you have a 10-year bond, and you hold on to that bond for the full 10 years, as long as that company or municipality or country doesn't go bankrupt, you'll get your money back. So you put in $1,000, you get a 3% rate, you know, you'll get your interest every year, and at the end of 10 years, you get your money back. However, let's say after 2 years, you want to sell that bond because you have some expense that comes up, or you need to liquidate. Well, what could happen is you could have to sell that for underneath the value you bought it at. And the math behind this of how they figure it out, and I'm going to use easy numbers here. So let's say we had $1 million and you have a 10-year bond, or technically if the duration was 10 years. If the rates were to go up 1%, the underlying value would go down the inverse of what the duration is. So in layman's terms, if the duration is 10, for every 1% the rate goes up, the underlying value would go down by 10. If the duration was 8, then it would, you know, if it goes up 1, it would go down 8. So that's basically in a easiest way to explain is that how it happens.
So if you have, I put it like this, whoever the hell is buying bonds, I have no idea why, because inflation is way more than whatever you're getting in. You know, I don't know why. It's because it makes it more liquid.
They're
or they
safe.
Can, yeah.
Well, for the past 30 years, the opposite of that has been going on. So because when rates go down, the underlying value of the bonds go up. So if you had, let's say you were getting paid 7%, and now the prevailing bonds,
everybody's
going to
want to buy that 7% bond now.
Yeah. So the opposite. So my entire lifetime, it has been going in the opposite direction, except now we've gotten ourselves into this position where the Fed is stuck between a rock and a hard place that's of their own doing, where they can't ever raise the rates. Yeah, of course they can raise the rates if they want to tank everything, but this entire economy is predicated on printing more and more money, getting deeper and deeper into debt, because the money is debt. The only way to get a dollar into the system is to create a dollar of debt. So from day one, this entire system is basically high-tech slavery that you can never get out from underneath, because we have to pay interest to the Federal Reserve. Then the whole thing is a scam. And I see people that are just absolutely not taking this into account, and all the regulators want to focus on, you know, Bitcoin and all these other things that are going on. And yes, there are, you know, cryptos that are a scam, in my
opinion. They're a teeny tiny drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
You know, when you're talking, God, what is it? You know, how many hundreds of billions are there in crypto?
Half a trillion.
Okay, so $500 billion. $500 billion is chicken shit money, okay? So when you're talking the bond market, you're talking what? How many gazillions?
I mean, you're talking tens of trillions.
So the crypto, but they see it as a, it's going to be amazing when you see crypto as a flight to safety and stability. Seriously. When crypto is flight to stability, you know you got issues, okay? So this is what's happened. If you go and you buy a bunch of bonds, and for whatever reason, you know, because it's more liquid or stable, or biggest reason is because they can take a big dump of cash. Your company, you just sold, you merged, you did, you got, oh, so I'm sitting here on a bunch of cash. What am I going to do with it? Put it on the mattress? I mean, I got to do something with it. Well, I don't know, they're not feeling real comfortable about banks, I guess, you know, but they go and they buy a bunch of treasuries. Well, I look at the 30-year treasury, you know, because that it's at like 2.9% or something. And I remember when it was 16, okay? It was just unsustainable. Kind of, you know, they had to increase it when Volcker back in Reagan day. Long story. But
and we could never get back to that again, ever, because it would be.
Can't.
We can't even get to 8. We can't even get to 4. And because we have been checkmated.
Well,
right
why
now.
Did they do that? Because nobody will buy them. You know, why would they have such high interest rates on treasuries? So somebody would buy them.
And to stop runaway inflation.
You know, and well, that's what Volcker was kind of, you got to stop this. And how that impacted, I have no idea. But so I'm going, all right, so you buy all these bonds, you have them sitting there, and then the interest rate starts to go up. Well, the ones that you bought, you know, at 3%, well, nobody wants those when they can go buy for the same amount of money and get 5%, okay? So why are they doing this? It's just to have mass liquidity, big, giant numbers, and they'll take a loss just to have some stability. Well, what happens when that stability goes away and the dollar value goes down?
From the first letter of Captain Mark. History is full of flowery documents claiming to limit the power of the crown, but these poetic social contracts have been impotent to prevent the predation. Limited government is a lie they use to keep us submissive. The crown cannot be trusted to abide by its founding charters, nor its treaties, nor even its own rules. The essence of the crown is centralized violence, and I've had enough. That's why I raised my black banner. I am no revolutionary. My aim is not to reset the cycle of violence, but to break it. My aim is an evolved society, invisible to the crown. Not a new hierarchy, but decentralized networks with no central figure for the crown to target. If you want your servile life, keep it. But we will not submit to the crown's agenda. And when you are ready to stop being its beast of burden, ready for adventure and opportunity, join us at piratswithoutborders.com.
North, an extremely vocal opponent of gay marriage, drew fire during his 2010 re-election campaign for saying that the legalization of gay marriage would lead to man-horse marriages. In one instance, he told the New Haven Register, quote, "It's a slippery slope. If we allow two men to marry, what's next? Men marrying horses?" But yesterday, North found himself at the center of a media firestorm when the New York Times published photos of North on what appears to be romantic outings with a horse. Gathered during the Times' two-month investigation, the pictures show North in almost a dozen locations with the same three-year-old mare. A former aide discovered links to numerous horse-related sites, including phillyfreaks.com and hothindquarters.com on North's work computer. The Times is accusing North of using federal funds to pay for luxurious trips, including a three-night stay at the high-end Sueños Stables in Catalonia, Spain, last month. North released a statement yesterday claiming he only spent time with the horse twice while conducting research for his anti-gay marriage project.
This is the Onion News Network.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied. I don't need.
Yeah, we just got to break free.
All right.
This is an enormous amount of money are in bonds.
Or break three for the 10-year treasury.
Break three.
We've got to break three.
Oh. Yeah, going up.
Yeah.
You know, well, the thing, this is what I'd check. If you look at the 30-year treasury, and you can see that back in the early 80s, it went to 15, 16%. It was ridiculous. And it was there for longer than comfortable with. But, man, are people wanting to borrow money from America then, you know, because you're paying 16% for 30 years? Crap. I want a bunch of that, you know.
But even then, the inflation was probably really 20. So, I mean, you're right. Still losing money. But,
exactly. So it doesn't really work. I mean, you got to have something else that's a performing asset that, you know, gets, well, I don't know. It's hard to beat 16%. But then there was in the early 90s, it was like 1990. And this is when I first started getting in politics, going to Washington, all that kind of crap. And they were freaking out that they had to pay 8%. And this is when Greece was going on, and they were going, oh my God, they broke 6%, we're all going to die. And I'm going, hell, I remember when they were freaking out in America at 8. You know, so I'm going, why are they freaking out? Well, now they don't freak out so much. It's just like with the economy took a dump in 08, they're going, nah, we got that covered. Well, they do a reserve requirement now, the bank, they have this big giant hunk of money that they're paying them not to lend out, with all the lefts going, hey, they gave you all this bailout, and you're supposed to trickle down to us when we get, like, loans and stuff. And they go, not so much. Because they were paying them to hold it there. Why? As a buffer. Because when this goes again, like 08 again, they don't want to blaze. All of a sudden, they don't have any money. The whole thing's going down. We need bailout, like, right freaking not later.
No, they're going to have a bail-in. And there's actually an article on the Federal Reserve's own website that I found several years ago where the, at the time, Stanley Fischer, who was the vice chairman of the Fed, actually said that we're going to have bail-inable, we need to issue these bail-inable bonds, a.k.a., you know, everybody's going to be taking a haircut. And I know we don't have too much time before your next guest comes on, and I did want to talk a little bit about, there was a Zero Hedge article a few weeks ago where it was Jerome Powell, who's the soon-to-be inducted new Fed chairman, and he starts talking about the Federal Reserve's bond positioning and how they're going to be selling off their bonds right now. And I'll kind of skip to his third concern because it ties into what you're saying here. And it goes, my third concern, and others have touched on it as well, is the problem of exiting from a near $4 trillion balance sheet. We've got a set of principles from June 2011 and have done some work since then, but it just seems to me that we seem to be way too confident that exit can be managed smoothly. Bingo. Markets can appear to be much more dynamic than we appear to think. When you turn and say to the market, I've got $1.2 trillion of these things, it's not just the $20 billion a month, it's the sight of the whole thing coming, and I think there is a pretty good chance that you could have quite a dynamic response in the market. So right now, if you're holding on to U.S. Treasury debt,
quite a dynamic response. I love how they word this crap.
Yeah, so if you are the, and I've got to give this guy a little bit of credit, that he's actually saying some things that are surprising me for a Federal, not that I'm here, ever going to give a Federal Reserve chairperson any credit, but he is try saying, like, hey, man, I'm just coming in and inheriting this ship, even though he was there the entire time, you know, for the last couple of administrations. But why this is so amazing to me right now is, I mean, you've got the Federal Reserve chair admitting that basically, you know, hey, everybody thinks that we can just go ahead and, you know, get rid of this stuff easily.
No,
but
that's not the story.
Well,
to me, the story is that they even bought it to begin with, that it's on their balance sheet, that you have the people that issue the money.
And they bought it at 100 cents in the dollar, too.
Yeah, buying their own, buying the U.S. debt with money they just printed. That's just stupid.
And it was mortgage debt, too, from the banks. I mean, they bought all the toxic mortgage assets that nobody wanted, and they did so at 100 cents on the dollar.
To write off.
Yeah.
They're written off. This is not performing. They're not going to pay it off. This is not, they just took and said, oh, we'll take this crap. Okay, we'll put this garbage bag over here in the corner, and we'll put a dollar sign on it, and they'll just sit there as a asset. You know, you don't have to pay people to haul off the garbage. You know, so it means nothing, and this is all coming to unwind. And it was shuffling paper. It was nothing, and sooner or later, this all has to flush out. And that's what he's saying. We got all this stuff sitting here. What are we going to do with it?
And well, the thing is, if you're China right now and you're holding on to, you know, $1 trillion of our debt right now, and you know that,
get rid of it,
and you know that the Fed's going to be doing this, you want to front run them. You don't want to say, hey, I don't want to be the one holding the bag here. And so what China did is about a week or two ago, they came out and said, you know, we're thinking about not buying any more debt. So in Wall Street terms, is when you're saying it's a hold, that means it's
you're
a sell.
Selling, yeah.
And so, you know, that's quite an amazing thing that's going on. And also, while the rates are going up, it is supposed to be good, you know, supposedly for the dollar. And what we've seen is the dollar has gone down, you know, more at the beginning of this year than it has, you know, basically since I was 11 months old. So, I mean, it's been over 30 years since the last time the dollar started off a year this week. And last year, the dollar was down roughly, I'm not looking at any notes here, but it was down roughly 10%. And so we're continuing this. And a lot of people are saying that, you know, when the rates go up, or, you know, Wall Street guys say, you know, when the rates go up, well, then that means that there should be more demand for U.S. dollars. You know, and so you have the dollar going down with the same backdrop of, you know, basically negative interest rates all around the world, extremely low interest rates all around the world, and people still don't want to hold on to the dollar. And so it's the same situation you're talking about with home prices going down with the backdrop of being at, you know, whatever it was, 19-year lows, as I think you mentioned. So it's
and
the
supply,
same.
Yeah.
So it's the same deal. And then this is going to have trickle down everywhere. And another thing that was in that article that was particularly amazing to me is that you've got, what's his name, Jerome Powell, talking about unloading their short volatility position. So I don't know if he means that the Fed was actually buying VIX, which is the volatility index that just measures how much basically the stock market goes up and down. And so why?
Yeah. This is a derivative. The VIX is just, it's just your side bet on what the weather is going to be. What the hell is the Fed doing in that?
I mean, if you ask me what are the two worst investments you could have long-term, I would probably say short the VIX and long-term treasury bonds. Now, look at what the Federal Reserve has. Supposedly, they're short the VIX, and they have long-term treasury bonds. I mean, it's like they're the worst-run hedge fund in the world, except they have such clout with $4.4 trillion that their clout then distorts everything else. So a lot of the things that, you know, guys like myself and Peter Schiff have been talking about and yourself have been talking about for a while that are going to happen, a lot of the reason why it's been delayed is because they're in there with their trillions of dollars effing everything up and distorting things, yeah. Because we don't have a free market right now. A free market doesn't have a Federal Reserve System. A free market doesn't have these guys that go into a room and set interest rates. Because I'm smart enough to know that I'm not smart enough to be able to set in interest rates. It should be the market that sets it.
Yeah, this I want to give you the circumstances. Having gone through this, you know, a few times, you know, in my life, and certainly we analyzed a crap out of it in 08, 9, 10, around in there, 7, 8, 9, 10. We were just, you know, getting into all the gas. We, you know, detailed everything. We had whiteboards and chalk on the weekends and people coming in and got it, okay? Then they did...
Racist with your whiteboards.
They did this with the Big Short. Now, Davi just saw it for the first time a few nights ago with my in-laws. You know, we were over here watching. I'm going, and it's coming again. You know, they are doing the same thing. Well, if you're down in the bowels of the Titanic.
We're crowdfunding the sequel buying crypto.
Yeah. If you're down in the bowels of the Titanic and you see the whole side ripped and it's coming in. Well, there's some guys down there and they'll set up there just like they're on the field of a football game doing their commentary, whatever, for the finances. There'll be some guys that, yep, it's coming in over here, and we got a rate of, and it's kind of in the at this rate. And kind of, no, we kind of got so-and-so over here, kind of stopped it up a little bit and slowed the bleed. Kind of got to, and they'll sit there and analyze and go over and over. While those of us that knows what's happening, we're going to the top of the ship and lashing some doors together and whatever and getting the F out. Because I don't need to see the details and have all the stuff described in the crap when you know what's going to happen. You see my point? I don't need to go. And this guy and the news and the buzz and kind of, and the, oh, crypto and kind of, you know, all the shiny object distraction and stuff. You know what's going to happen. Get the boats.
Kind of say you're giving them way too much credit because they're not over there analyzing what's going on. They're up there arguing about the bar tab or talking about the weather as there's a huge hole in the ship. They don't even talk about any of this
stuff. Water's coming up to their knees.
You're giving them way too much credit right now. Because there's very few people talking about this message right now.
Yeah, no, I see your point. I'm just trying to illustrate that, you know, all this new, it doesn't matter. It's already done. It's baked in the cake. It's happened already.
And Trump's going to be the
fall
guy.
The bell's already rung.
And nothing Trump can do can stop this.
Nothing.
And that's why I am so frustrated with all the Republicans who are now, you know, bought into all this. Yeah, I mean, Trump is
doing
a lot
of
good
things.
In 5 seconds. No, I mean...
buy something else. Get assets.
It's called the crack-up
boom, where everybody will take these worthless dollars. Oh, I can get that rake for $40? Okay. You know, because that's how bad it's going to get.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.